Welcome to the Day One Podcast Extra. This is Peter Wallace, and with me is the Reverend William Blake Ryder, rector of Christ Episcopal Church in Poughkeepsie, New York, and one of the 2006 recipients of the John Hines Preaching Award given by Virginia Theological Seminary in Alexandria, Virginia. Blake, welcome.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be here.
You are a descendant of the Cherokee Nation, and your family, as you say, considers itself Native American. Has that influenced your ministry, your outlook?
It certainly has influenced my outlook on life. Even in Oklahoma, where I grew up, where many, many people have Native American ancestry, still the Anglo-white culture was predominant. So being raised in a household where we were firmly told not to consider ourselves as white, but as the other, certainly influenced me in many ways. I'm so close to it, of course, I can't diagnose all those so well. So I think my interest, as I go back and look at my ancestors who were ethnically cleansed and who were forcibly removed, that had to affect my predisposition or interest in matters of social justice and civil rights and that whole spectrum of things.
I'm fascinated that you attended Oral Roberts University in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and you talked a bit about that on our regular Day One program. But tell us again how that happened, and how did your experience there impact your own spiritual journey?
I ended up at Oral Roberts because of a wonderful gift of a full scholarship. So that was
helps.
That helps a lot. My parents helped me make that decision very quickly. I was an athletic trainer in junior high and high school. And I'm sure it's still true today, but at least back in the 70s, we were recruited just like the athletes were. So I had looked at schools like Oklahoma State and OU that had big football programs, which meant lots of ankles to tape in two-a-day practices in August. And then I looked at ORU, which had no football team, which was a good thing, and the offer of a full scholarship. And 50 miles away from where I grew up, didn't know anything about Oral Roberts or the university. Didn't know that I had to wear a tie to class or keep my hair cut short, any of those kind of societal rules that ORU had in place. But anyway, it was a full scholarship. It was doing something I liked within the athletic field. So so off I went and found myself in an overwhelmingly Christian environment, something I was raised as a Christian, but not in where every aspect of life was so influenced by that culture. So and certainly to be exposed to the preaching of Oral all those years and the other and the chaplains, the other people who spoke in chapel, certainly influenced my spiritual path. It was there that I became an Episcopalian while I was at ORU. So the my background in the Disciples of Christ denomination had me predisposed to receive the Lord's Supper every week. That part of a life of worship was very normal for me. And when I first experienced the Episcopal Church at a service, I remember sneaking downtown one Sunday night to Trinity Episcopal Church under the cover of darkness, so no one would know what I was doing, to go to Episcopal service. I felt immediately at home in the service. And as many people I've heard say over the years, the first time I went to an Episcopal service, I realized that I had always been an Episcopalian, and that was just the right thing to do. Still a year or two before I began to attend St. John's in out nearer to campus, but and it was at St. John's where I actually was confirmed and became an Episcopalian.
Then you worked in the oil and gas industry for nearly 20 years, and I assume you were based in Houston, essentially. Is that right?
I was. Well, I started in Bartlesville working for Phillips 66 and then moved to Houston with them. Changed a few times and ended up with another company in Houston. During that time, I spent a year, almost a year in Pakistan, in Karachi in the 80s. And then the last 4 years from 94 to 90, into 98, I was in Tunis in North Africa.
When you were active in Houston in the church, you helped do a number of things in the community. You were involved in helping to open an AIDS residential facility, series of programs to train young children at risk for dyslexia, all sorts of things, wonderful programs. They sound like major endeavors. What What encouragement could you give laypersons listening about serving their communities in ways like that?
Well, to encourage people to do it, mm-hmm. to do something, whether it's starting something. Those are ambitious things, and looking back now with 20 years of experience, I can't imagine that we had the nerve to do that, but there we did it. But the many of us are in places in our lives that we have discretionary time, discretionary money, and even talents and gifts that we can share. And there are an infinite amount of needs in the community. So there's got to be something that almost everybody could find to do. And I would encourage everyone, lay and ordained, but we're speaking of lay people, to get together with another friend or two, mm-hmm. and dream a dream, and then take that first step and see what can happen.
Was your involvement in those type of social services as part of your faith, did that have a part in your decision to enter ordained ministry?
Yes, it did. Those all occurred before 94 when I moved overseas at the last time to go to Tunis. So in the late 80s and early 90s, as I was helping with the dyslexia programs and Milam House, the AIDS mm-hmm. residents, I began to see what might be possible for my life in a full-time, dedicated way working on issues of social justice and community needs. And so I struggled for a while when I came back from overseas. I wasn't sure if ordination was right, or because you don't have to be ordained to do this kind of work. So whether just to be a community organizer or to work in a nonprofit was the thing that I was called to do. And I ran a little bit like Jonah a long while to avoid ordained ministry, but that came to be obviously the only thing to do. Peter, there's a fascinating bit of this story about Milam House, the AIDS residence that we put together. We literally found a house with plywood over the windows, the roof falling in. It was abandoned. We took our crowbars and basically broke in to see what we thought about the house, and wandered around, thought it looked like a good place that we could maybe make a place for people to live. This was back in the late 80s when mm-hmm. AIDS was so mm-hmm. rampant in the Houston community. And as we began to have garage sales and bake sales, and we soon realized that was not going to raise the amount of money we needed. So we applied for some grants, and all of that came to fruition, and it all happened. When we did the title search to find out who owned the property, what we found out is the last time the house was a private residence, it was the rectory of Christ Church Cathedral.
Wow.
And John Hines was the last person to live in the house.
Wow.
When he became bishop and Dean Richardson came in at the cathedral sold the house mm-hmm. and bought another house for the rectory for the dean. But the last family to live there was were the Hines, which is just
poetic.
Very poetic.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you ended up at Virginia Seminary to prepare for your ministry. Tell us a little bit about your experience in seminary. How was it?
Well, it was great. When I went to seminary, I was 46, and I was more than a little afraid about the academic reentry point.
Yeah.
But the seminary is both a challenging and a gentle place. Mm. So it was a wonderful place to receive an education from a wide variety of teachers you would describe as evangelical to broad, from liberal to conservative, strongly based on scripture, huge emphasis on preaching, and a real call. I felt as I was there that the seminary had a real call to train people to go be parish priests.
Mm-hmm.
And I greatly appreciate the education I got. Look forward to being engaged with the seminary for the rest of my life, I would encourage anybody seeking ordination or seeking a divinity degree in the Episcopal Church to strongly consider VTS. It's a great place.
After seminary, you joined the staff of Christ Church Cathedral in Houston, which is a large urban parish with a vibrant outreach to the community. But you recently moved to become rector of your own parish in Poughkeepsie, New York. Seems there would be a lot of adjustments to make in that move. How has it gone for you?
Well, it's been challenging and exciting at the on all fronts. At the cathedral, I was, I think, the sixth priest and a staff of, I don't know, over 30, probably maybe close to 40 people. In Poughkeepsie, it's me, a secretary and a part-time sexton, and then a part-time organist and a part-time music director. Mm-hmm. So, in a great big building that was built in 1880. So the challenges are immense, but it's they're all exciting. So it's a great congregation at Christ Church in Poughkeepsie, people who take their faith very, very seriously, and their call to outreach and community ministry very seriously. So they're teaching me a lot. I'm teaching them some, and I'm confident we're going to have a wonderful ministry together.
So you're relatively new to the priesthood, and here you've already won a major preaching award. How do you respond to something like that?
I'm just stunned. I'm really, really stunned. One of the challenging parts of the move to Poughkeepsie is that instead of being on the rotation of a huge staff in Houston where I might have preached every 2 months, perhaps, at a principal service on Sunday— Now in Poughkeepsie, I'm preaching every week. Mm-hmm. So that's a new discipline for me to learn and a new way to manage my time, which I'm enjoying. It's challenging and it's new, but it's going to be a good thing. And preaching prophetically is I don't think you can sit down and plan to do that. I think it comes upon you authentically from God when it comes. So sometimes sermons are prophetic and sometimes they're not. I don't know if anybody has the inner strength or emotional energy to preach prophetically every Sunday. I don't know if a congregation has it to listen every Sunday.
Right.
So, but I hope to continue to be a student of the Bible and a student of my community and world and a student of myself and keep preparing sermons that will speak to me. I think that's a necessary thing when you preach, and then also that have a message for the congregation that I'm serving.
Blake Ryder, it's been a joy to have you with us.
Thanks, Peter. Thank you very much.